My name is Lillian Bramley, and I am a youth support worker at Cromarty Friendship Society here in Terrace, British Columbia.
What is the scope of programming and advocacy work that you do at the Cromarty Friendship Society?
The scope is pretty large. Yeah. We are an early intervention prevention program. We are funded through the Ministry of Children and Families, our program. And we have a substantial caseload of Indigenous and non-Indigenous youth that access our services in the Terrace community for mental health and support and culture. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that the Cromarty Friendship Society's approach to working with youth is quite holistic. So can you tell me how this is done and how you are trained and what some of the results of a more holistic approach has been in your experience?
Absolutely. So when we talk about holistic with Indigenous culture, there are the emotional, the mental, the physical, and the spiritual. That is how we base our programming. So a lot of other clinical programs don't have the same cultural approach because they're clinical, they're medical. We really understand and have a knowing of the spiritual. And a lot of the youth that we work with who are Indigenous are searching for almost their spiritual identity within their own culture. So we do this by doing lots of ceremonial style participation for the youth. We hold sometimes feasts. A feast is like a lot of the First Nations, when there's a passing, they have feasts. So we teach the youth how to do a feast from a different culture. There's Tsimshian, there's Nishka. So there's the feasting system. Then there's the language system. A lot of the youth don't know where their language comes from. So sometimes we'll get a speaker come in and talk about language to the youth to make them just get an understanding of where their language comes from, because culture is partially language. And when you lose your language, you kind of lose a little bit of your culture.
Absolutely.
So the culture, the language, the art, the making of drums, is a very visceral touching and creating with your hands is a very physical, somatic, spiritual experience for a lot of these youth. And it makes them feel alive. And that's really like to spark healing. That's why we're holistic. To spark healing in Indigenous youth or any human being, you have to get them to be in their body and start creating, whether it's art, music, anything, which creates a healing capacity within the group that we're working with, the youth. And then that in turn is where they change. You see a change in them. And it's healing is an internal job. It's not something that's external to us. We teach the youth that it's something that's internal, where a lot of society says, oh, we have to focus on the external, talk therapy. It does work for some people, but for people who have been marginalized and held back, like with colonization, they don't work that way. And the government, I think, has really missed the spot with working with Indigenous people and healing them, helping them heal with all these services, because they're not looking at it from a holistic perspective. They're looking at it from a clinical perspective. So when our kids make drums, sing their songs, learn their languages, get an identity and a higher awareness that they belong to something bigger than themselves, understand their culture, that is healing for them. That is the whole holistic perspective for that individual. And when that youth heals and helps themselves, they help their community at the same mm-hmm. time. It has a ripple effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, in one point to kind of stick on it that you mentioned in there, in many good points, obviously, but that internalized healing, it's also something that can't be rushed.
No,
and so I
you're
think
absolutely
that,
right.
And I think that that's why, you know, many support systems ending at the, you know, on a youth's 19th birthday in British Columbia is really short-sighted. And you had mentioned earlier as well that many youth, they can't engage in these support programs because they don't have trust in the government. There's no reason for them to have trust in the government. So
absolutely. You wouldn't believe how many times I've heard, I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
I feel awkward. I can't connect. And I feel like I'm being judged. And kids are so perceptive.
Yeah.
With people in there, even if they have trauma, they're still very perceptive. Trauma doesn't make you, right? It's just something that's happened to you that you have to work through. But kids are so perceptive, and they're like, if I don't feel comfortable, I am not going. And that's that.
Yeah.
I will never force a youth to do anything they don't want to do. That, how would that ever help anybody, right?
Yeah. And I mean, this is kind of, you know, thinking outside of, you know, your experience and far outside of mine as well, or not experience, but what do you think, if you could dream a little bit, what do you think that the government needs to do, or what could be done to start rebuilding that trust with youth so that these systems of support are actually available and accessible to all youth, especially those who have experienced trauma?
Okay, well, I've actually thought about this over the last week, because I mean, we need to deconstruct our approach to working with Indigenous youth. We have to understand the lens of trauma and how these programs could actually make them hurt more than actually help them. So coming from changing our whole perspective on how we think something will actually help an individual without understanding the fact that if that individual has not healed from their trauma, which is a nervous system disorder, trauma is actually trapped in the nervous system. Dr. Gabor Maté talks about this quite extensively in his research with addiction and trauma. Mm-hmm. If we don't change our approach, we're going to waste a whole bunch of money. It's going to all go down the drain, and we're going to have the same problem generation after generation, because we're not dealing with the fact that we're not helping these kids resolve the trauma first. But we're missing the boat.
Yeah.
even mental health is missing the boat, because we're not understanding how we're hurting people instead of helping them.
Yeah. And I think that that's the importance of, you know, more localized community and grassroots, and as well holistic organizations that, that when they show this change and when they do the work, you know, but however, it's those organizations and people like yourself and your colleagues who are really, 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 really overrun with, you know, with cases and clients that are just, you know, you kind of almost feel like you're running in one spot sort of thing. But I do think that there is hope, and hopefully in larger conversations.
Yeah. The psychology is changing.
Yeah.
We are starting to really understand, like, there's more evidence-based research now being done on trauma, mm-hmm. and understanding how pervasive our systems in our society create trauma because we're not addressing it. So now you're going to see a big change, I think, in the next 5 years on how we approach what we teach and how our organizations. I think a good indicative nature of this is how we had COVID. For the last 2.5 years, the entire population in Canada has actually started to focus on their health. Mm-hmm. Like, if we didn't have COVID, we wouldn't have gone and sat there and said, you know, our policies, even in our own organization, have become more caring because, oh, sickness is actually a real problem in our society, right?
Yeah.
In the work environment. So we're changing our thinking about what it is to have healthy people in our work environments, mm-hmm. and supporting that.
Yeah, actually, and that was my next question as well, was to ask if you believe that there are enough supports, advocacy for advocacy work, addictions, abuse, trauma, dissociation in youth in the North.
No, we need a lot more than what we have. Mm-hmm. We do. And I think it's about time that these questions are getting asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we've been advocating for a long time, but if nobody's listening, if people are ignoring, then nothing gets changed, right?
How do you think that these changes actually do get made? Is it, you know, quite a different, you know, all facets kind of coming together from both psychiatric care to, you know, a more holistic approach, like what you're working with as well, you know, changing in policy as well?
Well, it's all connected.
Yeah.
Everything's connected, right? So if we were to approach our policymaking from a holistic perspective, you would see change.
Yeah.
Because we're actually looking at the human being in the picture. Mm-hmm. Not a law or a policy that's been created by some government or some higher people who have no, not that they don't understand, but like the daily reality of what life is for a kid or a youth that's suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You work with youth between the ages of 8 and 18.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, what has your experience been with youth that you're working with that are near, if they are, you know, in the BC, in BC Youth in Care Fund, if they are part of that, if they are part of that support system and they're rounding the age of 18, what's your experience of their, you know, mental state at that time, or concerns that they're having? What has been your experience with that?
My experience has been good and bad. Mm-hmm. I've had some success stories and I've had some not so successful. So the success stories that I've had, what I've noticed is that they've had lots of family support, even though they've been in ministry care. They got a YAG, which is a youth agreement through the Ministry of Children and Families, for them to live on their own and get their support and their school. And they have made many rules for these youth to abide by to get this kind of support from the ministry, but they do it. And then parents come in or aunties come in and say, you know, like, when you leave, you can come live with us. If you go to school, go to college, we'll support. Because sometimes parents grow up and they heal, or family members realize this is our family. We really need to step up and really be in this person's life, right? So I've seen that, and that's amazing, because that youth is supported by family, which I think is the best kind of support you can get.
Yeah.
And they do go off to college, and I get emails from them like, Lillian, I completed my 2 years of my apprenticeship at the college as a cook, and now I'm going off to Vancouver to do more training in chefry, or, you know, they have success. And I'm like, oh my God, that is, as a youth worker, that is the best feeling that you could ever experience, when you see kids actually supporting themselves and making something of their life that makes them happy. Right.
Yeah.
And then the flip side is the kids that have been just dropped without the support of family. That's where I see, if they did have reoccurring issues with substance misuse, like an addiction, and addictions can be alcohol, drug, or behavioral, right? It doesn't, there is no lens on addiction. It's just addiction. Mm-hmm. It goes, they revert back, and then they get, you know, like, they don't want to see a mental health worker. They stop taking their medication if they do need medication to help their mental health. And then that puts them in a position of, okay, well, I can start doing marijuana or drugs again. And then it's a downward spiral. And then I see them on the street as homeless. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, my heart breaks, but there's only so much time and effort that one person can do. So there's, for as many success stories, there are actually more failures than success.
So with this youth and support program being extended to the age of 21, do you think that, A, do you think that $35 million is enough to get started over the next 3 years? And B, do you feel like the program is having enough it's almost enough of a reflection to change what's actually needed? Or do you think it's just the same work being done longer in a youth's life?
Okay. So $35 million is probably a lot of money. It's good. That money part is okay. That's not the issue here. It's the rolling out of how you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, after reading it, it's like, it's good, but it could be better.
Yeah.
It could be a lot more holistic focused. It can be a lot more healing focused for the youth.
Yeah.
And I think if you could measure that in a quantifiable, quantitative kind of way, you would see a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to change our approach. And this is, I've been talking to the school about how their policies are affecting kids in schools. It's very power over. It's very, I'm your teacher, you listen to me.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. And the kids are like, I have trauma. I got fecal alcohol spectrum disorder. I don't understand what you're asking of me. I get upset with you. You don't understand me. I can't connect with you. I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. They bounce. They drop out of school because they haven't had that understanding.
Yeah.
So, yes, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was, no, sorry. Please, you continue.
So that is the constantly, when you're not in it, you don't realize it. But now that I've been in it for almost 8 years, I'm like, wow, our society has a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
A lot of work. And if we go back in time, 1,000, 2,000 years ago, most Aboriginal communities, before we had colonization in Canada or anywhere in the world where there's been colonization, guess what? They were healthy, thriving communities because they understood on a fundamental level that we all need support and care in our community. They were very communal living. We all helped each other. We all foraged food together. We all survived together. Mm-hmm. Where now it's very individualistic. You know, our persona in especially here in Canada and the United States, we fail to realize that we're all really connected and we all affect each other in a very significant, impactful way. And we all have trauma. And if you think about this, I was actually talking to my supervisor, like even our organizations are designed and built with a traumatic lens because right. the people that created them had trauma too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then how do you expect youth and people to function in a society where it's already built up on this traumatic model that is in existence today? Mm-hmm. That's really thinking about it in a very different capacity. It's huge, you know, but it's truthful too. So we are changing, but we're changing, you know, community grassroots from the bottom up. You've heard that expression before, right? Mm-hmm. From the bottom up. So that's what I see happening. We change the way we do things from the bottom up, and then the kids go out into the world and they do that. And it's a ripple effect, but it's slow. Unless we get more people on board across the province to actually start changing the way they actually roll out and approach services for youth. And not just youth, for everybody, really, for everybody.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, like the discussion today is about youth, but yeah, as you've mentioned, this is multi-generational, and it's not, there's no quick fix. There's no one answer, but if there can start to be changes made now, perhaps youth can also be those teachers.
That's the key, because they are the ones, like you can lead a horse to water, but they got to drink it, right?
Yeah.
So you can give the kids all the tools in the world. They're the ones eventually that have to make the change for themselves. And once they do that, then that ripple effect happens.
Yeah.
And that helps their communities, their grandparents, their parents start healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lillian, I really appreciate the time that you've given me today. Before we stop, is there anything else that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know? Maybe about, not even about this program, but maybe just specifically about the Komodi Friendship Society services that you offer, anything like that?
Oh yeah, we service everything here. Like our program is just one of many programs. Like we are an Aboriginal child mental health program, but we also do family support. We have our family preservation program, which is amazing. They do visits with parents who are involved with the ministry, getting access back to their kids, mm-hmm. which is really important because a lot of our kids are in ministry care in the terrorist community. And because parents have trauma and they weren't taught how to properly parent with, you know, in a healthy way. That's why this happens. So that program actually helps parents work on skills with the ministry in tandem to get their kids back, which is a great program. Because I think most kids want to be back with their parents, right?
Yeah.
25% of them do. So we have that program, as well as we have a lot of our baby development programs in our new building. We've, you know, so many services for the terrorist community, for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. And we're busy. All our programs, I think, we're skipping along really good because we have lots of work to do.
Yeah.
And we, because we're open, and our program is an open referral, meaning you don't have to jump through hoops and calls and faxes and emails to get you into our program. You can just come in and talk to us and we'll get you in.
Oh, that's wonderful. If you could, because I'm in Smithers here. Mm-hmm. Can you let people know, I guess, how to contact the Komodi Friendship Society or where to go if they want to walk into the front door?
So where we are, child and youth mental health, we're at 3313 Calum Street here in Terrace. And our number here is 250-635-4906, extension 1026 me, or just call that number and ask for ACYMH and you'll get put right to the program. But that phone number is for all of Komodi, 250-635-4906. And we have our other location at 4716 Park Avenue, which is our new building, which houses all the other programs for child development and family support and everything you can imagine. And plus, we do a lot of community outreach, too. Like we're always delivering food to different families. Like we do a lot every mm-hmm. week, every month. There's something for us always. We're always giving to the community in some way because there's a need. you know, everything's gotten more expensive. Groceries are expensive. So we get funds for delivering food hampers to elders and to youth and families. We provide gift cards for support, like in case you're hungry and you don't have food, mom and dad, you know, things are tight. We do give save on food cards to youth and families as well. And clothing, like we just did a draw for Sport Check for families to come in to get some spring winter gear for their kids. And we gave them these cards, these Sport Check cards. So we're always trying to engage the community and give back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's little things like that, that, you know, boost somebody up. And then we have our big cultural events that happen in the summer, like National Aboriginal Day. We have events in the park, and we're going to be doing a whole bunch of cultural things. Now that COVID restrictions are easing up, right? We can do more.
Yeah.
It really stopped us. The 2.5 years stopped us a lot in doing cultural activities that involve the community.
Yeah, community outreach and bringing people together, which is so important as well.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Lillian, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
I wish I could do this more, because I think we need more awareness of how we want to really change the way we go about producing services for people, right? And any little bit of information that can change the way you think is where I'm at, because I really believe that we need to change just little bits, not huge changes, but enough to start seeing some positive results for youth and families.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes everybody. We're all connected. It takes all of us to have that same vision so we can go forward in this world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so thank you very much for having me on today. And I'm the same with you. I really do hope that people hear this and go, I think that's really fascinating. I think that maybe we should try to approach it like that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the goal, right?
That's community radio actually works to bring community together. Okay. Thanks a lot, Lillian.
You're very welcome, and have a great weekend.